ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्ति। So far in this chapter, Exigency of Action, we have covered first two topics. Action is inevitable, and then the value of action. So in these two topics, again, like I was putting last week also, all these are from the Bhagavad Gita. Everything in this book is from the scriptures. Swami himself mentions that nothing in the book is mine. The only contribution, which is the main contribution by Swamiji, is to put everything in a certain platform, starting from the known to the unknown, you know, and with contemporary thought and language, with a lot of contemporary anecdotes, examples, is communicating the scripture according to our level. So if you are somebody who has, you know, done the initial parts, you can dwell over part C. Part C is just Upanishads. Most of the part C is Upanishads and some of the very deep works of Swami Ramakrishna. That is part C. Part A and part B is all the other scriptures. It is not as if Bhagavad Gita is not there in part C, but little. A lot more Bhagavad Gita you will find in part A and part B. So, Gita emphasizes action. Nahi kashyat kshanamapi jatu tishtatya karma krit karyate hevashat karma sarva prakriti jayir gunaihi. None can remain without action even for a moment. Nobody can remain without action. Action is the insignia of life. Inaction is death. Now the thing is, therefore, we need to learn how to act. So what happens is, one set of people do not act, other set of people they act, but they create more and more impressions, vasanas, and they get bound. So you must learn the technique of right action, whereby you don't pull yourself away from action. You rather do the action, but you exhaust the existing vasanas and you don't create fresh vasanas. That's called technique of right action. Because God plus vasanas or desires equals human beings. Human beings minus vasanas or desires equals God. God you can replace it with bliss, happiness, freedom, all that. So, what is really binding you is your desires, which comes because of your misunderstanding of your true nature. You imagine yourself to be this limited individual, and as a result of this imagined sense of incompleteness, your thoughts run to the world outside. Thoughts running to the world outside is desires. So this entire samsara, which you have created mentally, is because of this ignorance and doership and desires. Take away these things, there is no samsara. So therefore, he says, having created this samsara now, if you say, I will stop, the mind is not going to stop. It's very easy, you know, to stop action. It's very, very difficult or almost impossible to stop the mind. The more you force, the more it runs. And that's why a lot of people who get into meditation and all, they go berserk actually. They go berserk. They start becoming more frustrated. Small, small things, they get very highly agitated. They get very angry. Immediately they'll explode. They don't understand what's happening. It's because you are trying to force your mind. You cannot force the mind. You cannot succeed like that. It's very dangerous actually. Mind has an elasticity, you know, it will snap. Then you will be the one who will suffer. So therefore, through the action, you have to attain in action. Naishkarmya Siddhi. is the word used in the Bhagavad Gita. Naishkarmya Siddhi means actionlessness. If you translate it in English, it is actionlessness. Perfection is actionlessness. But when you say perfection is actionlessness, it is not actionlessness at the physical level. If you say actionlessness means it is being doershiplessness. It is being doershiplessness. How to be without doership? Whether you do or don't do doesn't matter. See, the background of Bhagavad Gita is what Arjuna said, I will not fight. I will not fight against my guru, great grandfather. They're all good people, righteous people. We were about to commit sin, so let's stop this, let's go back. That was his argument. He said, we were about to commit sin. So by not doing action or fighting the battle, we will be avoiding sin. That was his logic. When Sri Krishna talks, he says, if you don't do this action, you are committing sin. Because it is what you ought to do as a warrior, as a soldier. As a soldier, you are supposed to do this activity. After having tried Sam, Dhan, Bhe, where they were not agreeing to stop the war, what can we do? So we are left with no choice but to fight the battle. So they fight. So he says, this is your duty as a Kshatriya. You are in the defense. You take all the salary for all these years. Suddenly, you will say, no, no, I will not fight. That means you are avoiding what you ought to do. When you don't do what you ought to do, you are committing sin. When you do what you ought not to do, then you are committing sin. And why are you doing this? Why are you doing what you ought not to do? And why are you not doing what you ought to do? Because your ego is coming in. Your doership is coming. So with the doership, Arjuna didn't want to fight. So one set of people with the doership, they will not fight. Another set of people with the doership, they will fight. Both are incurring sin. So therefore, when you gain this knowledge, you will act where you have to act, you will act. Whatever is your role, goal, obligation, you will fulfill that. But no doership. This knowledge only removes that.
Sometimes that comes at the cost of a relationship in a family, Guruji. Is that good to do?
See, the only highest relationship is with yourself, the true self, Atma. Anything that comes, you don't try to break any relationship unnecessarily. But if there is a choice between the lower and the higher, you have to choose the higher in any context. And when you choose the higher, you are actually choosing what is good for the other person, but the other person may not understand that. You see, when you say sometimes at the cost of relationship, what can we do? Yes, at the cost of relationship, we have to do. You have to choose between what is good and what is pleasant. What is right and what is unrighteous. So if there is a conflict between higher and the lower, you always choose the higher. Try and see if you can avoid the conflict with relationship and all that. Who wants to necessarily, you know, break the relationship? No, nobody would like to do that. You should rather have the relationship. But if it becomes inevitable, what you can? Other fellow is not listening. He wants to do or she wants to do the atrocity. Now you can't say, mera, you know, grandfather, mera guru, mera friend. Let them do. You can't. So anyway, so without doership is asking Arjuna to fight. That's why it's very interesting. One of the most important value Bhagavad Gita propagates is ahimsa. But the whole background is hinsa. I don't know whether anybody has asked question on this. Gita itself is talking about ahimsa. Advesha, Sarvabhutana, Maitra Prunaya Vacha. All these qualities that he gives, he talks about ahimsa. One of the qualities it mentions for a jnani is ahimsa. But it's on the battlefield of Kurukshetra he is talking about. When he's telling Arjuna to fight. So on one hand, he's saying fight, kill the fellows. And then on the other hand, he's saying ahimsa. Either Krishna must be pagal, or he must be saying something very deep. He obviously is not pagal. He's saying something very deep. What he's trying to say is, externally, when sometimes you try to avoid all that, see, I give this example in the class. One of the biggest problem I have is, I try to avoid using leather products. It's not possible we use. As much as possible, I try not. But sometimes, you know, when I try to buy a chappal without leather in India, either it is extremely expensive or it looks very bad. Either you end up buying rubber chappal or something like that. You don't know what to do, you know. So, now recently when I was in Dubai, luckily I got something not very expensive. They called it vegan chappal. So I bought it. So I was thinking, chappal I'm wearing is vegan. But with the vegan chappal I will be walking. But inadvertently I will be killing many insects. You cannot avoid. While I'm wearing the chappal, which I don't want to harm animals and all that. But only you can do. So, all these concepts you must understand. When he says actionlessness, means doershiplessness. So that technique he teaches. So for that first you must understand the chronology of action. How the action comes about. How does the action spring? What is the cause of action? And what is the effect of action? So how we have to use this action to evolve? You understand this, then you can. Nowhere I can see they are talking about it. And the Gita that is talking about, which Swamiji has taken and nicely presented in the book Vedanta Treatise in English language, these two nobody wants to read when they are young. We want to read when we are 60, 70. You must learn about how these actions come about, how to use them to evolve spiritually and achieve material success. When you are young, you have to do this. Nobody will do this. This is a very unfortunate thing because of misunderstanding. So that's the, you know, thing that we need to understand before we study chronology of action, the cause of action, how it springs, what are the results of action, how it binds us, how we can use it and become. So let's read this portion, chronology of action. Shweta, you can read?
Yes, Guruji. Chronology of action. Action is a symbol of life. As long as you live, you act. The type of action executed differs from individual to individual. It depends upon the inherent cause that produces it. The root of action is one's innate nature. Every human being is distinctly individualistic. His inherent tendency, innate bent, innermost nature is known as vasanas. Vasanas are the result of the past. Past actions produce present vasanas, and present vasanas produce further actions. Vasanas is the cause and the action. Vasana is the cause and action, the effect. Again, action becomes the cause and vasana the effect. This cause-effect cycle goes on like the phenomena of tree and seed, hen and egg, etc.
Continue.
Vasana, therefore, is the seed of action, the prime mover in the mechanism of action. Vasana is unmanifest. Action is the final manifestation of vasana. Each vasana, therefore, reaching its full expression, passes through the stages of thought and desire. In the chronology of an action, vasana produces thought, thought produces desire, and desire produces action. The unmanifest vasanas in you lie dormant as your potential nature. It is the state of deep sleep, which means dreamless sleep. When your vasanas manifest, they first appear as thoughts in your intellect. Your intellect, therefore, entertains thoughts according to the nature of your present vasanas. In the second stage of manifestation, vasanas expresses as desires in your mind. your desires again will be in the nature of your vasanas and thoughts.
Yeah, read this paragraph.
Consider the example of a painter. A painter is one who has a vasana for painting. While he is asleep, his vasana remains dormant without expression. When he wakes up, the vasana expresses itself in the intellect as thought of painting. The thought manifests in the mind as desire for painting. The desire expresses in the physical body as action of painting. It follows, therefore, that as long as your vasanas exist, there will be a constant flow of thoughts, desires, and actions. And when your vasanas are exhausted, your thoughts, desires, and actions become extinct. The total exhaustion of vasanas is the exalted state of self-realization, described as the state of vasanalessness, thoughtlessness, desirelessness, or actionlessness. People have misconstrued this state to mean abstinence from action, even as their vasanas remained within. Consecutively, they imposed physical restraints and denied themselves material or sensual life, little realizing that vasanas, thoughts and desires lingered within and frustrated their lifestyle. Such practices led to suppression rather than sublimation of the personality.
Yeah. So in these three paragraphs that we have seen, first thing it says is action is a symbol of life. I told you three factors are there. Mainly, when you say life, firstly, life means it should have these three ingredients. One is awareness. The awareness is not there, you are in coma. So awareness is there. And then second aspect is growth. And the third aspect of life, most important aspect of life is action. Action is a symbol of life. So as long as you live, you have to act. Even a sannyasi has certain duties that he or she has to do. Sannyasi may not be involved in physical activities, but the sannyasi has a lot of things to do at the mind level. You know, so therefore, that is why he has taken sannyas. He has renounced the world and he is to dedicate his time for thinking of the higher. So, as long as you live, you act. The day you stop action, when action ceases, your life becomes extinct. But the type of action each individual to individual, it will change. That is because of the innate nature, the innate temperament. You know, after this class, now each one will go according to their different vasanas. Isn't it? Each one have different vasanas. You also have interest in studying Vedanta, which is some portion of your vasanas. So you are here. Then once that is over, then you go into your respective set of vasanas, which is what brings the variety. You know? So that's what he's saying. Each one of us have different and distinct vasanas. Vasanas cannot be, strictly speaking, defined. Because vasanas is the ultimate cause for our birth, of the birth of the subtle body as well as the causal body. Sorry, the gross body. Subtle body is the mind and intellect. Gross body is the physical body. So if the mind, intellect, physical body, everything comes from vasanas. Because as the vasanas, so the thoughts, so the desires, so the body, so the environment also. Now when your vasanas change, the environment changes. The shirt you wear will change. Any you had a haircut will be different. No. Initially you had a different style. Now, different. Because vasanas have changed. So, deep inside, vasanas are there. It cannot be defined by intellect because intellect itself is a product of vasanas. So, it cannot define vasanas. Intellect cannot define vasanas. Intellect cannot define Atma. There is no definition for Atma. There are only pointers for Atma. You know, when you read certain portions in the Gita and all, you may think that these are all definitions of Atma. Nobody can define Atma. It is indescribable. Vasanas are also indescribable. So therefore they say, what is this? Maximum you can say, vasanas are the innate temperament, innate nature each one of us have. So that's what he's explaining. Every human being is distinctly individualistic. His inherent tendency, innate bent, inmost nature is known as vasanas. Vasanas comes from the root vas. Vas means fragrance. So each one of us have a separate fragrance, flavor, according to their vasanas. And from where these vasanas are coming? When you ask that, he says, it comes from the past action. Your past action produce present vasanas. So vasanas are the result of the past. At the same time, see, it's very interesting. Vasanas are the result of the past. Past actions produce present vasanas. And present vasanas produce further actions. So vasana is the cause and action is the effect. Action again becomes the cause and vasana the effect. So in this chronology what he wants to say is, from the vasana initially the thought comes. And from thought desires come and from desire action comes. And in most of the cases, from the action, the vasana again is produced. So, vasana, thought, desire, action, and action again produces vasanas. This cycle goes on and on and on. So, we need to break this. That is what he is saying here. Vasana is the seed of action, the prime mover in the mechanism of action. If there is action, means there is vasana. Without that, it is impossible. But the thing is, this vasana is unmanifest. Thoughts are manifest. Actions are manifest. But vasana is unmanifest. So therefore, if at all you want to say, what is vasana? Unmanifest action. Unmanifest desire. Unmanifest thought. But when it fully expresses itself, it goes through thought, desire and action. That's what he's saying. Each vasana before reaching its full expression passes through the stages of thought and desire. In the chronology of action, vasana produces thought, thought produces desire, desire produces action. The unmanifest vasanas in you lie dormant as your potential nature. It is a state of deep sleep, which means dreamless sleep. See, all of us when we are asleep, you know, let us say all of us are traveling in the flight and all are sleeping happily. No one will know who is the engineer, who is the doctor, who is the architect, who is a chartered accountant, who is a cricketer, who is an actor. Nobody will know. But when they wake up, each one's thought accordingly manifests and their discussions and everything will be in that area mostly. So therefore, in deep sleep, what is happening is, all your thoughts have gone into dormant state. They are remaining as vasanas. That's why you will go to sleep as a mathematician and you will get up as a mathematician. It is not possible that you will go to sleep as a cricketer and wake up as a mathematician. Not possible. So what is happening to all your thoughts, desires and actions which you were doing during the daytime when you are asleep? They are all in vasana state. Next day morning when you wake up, first thing you ask, who won the match yesterday in the IPL? Because you are a cricketer or you are interested in cricket. That will be the first question. If you are a mathematician, say, who solved the problem? You know. So therefore, in the deep sleep, the vasanas are there. In fact, we say deep sleep is a state of nothingness. But it is everythingness. When we say nothingness, in a way it is everythingness. Why? Because everything comes from the deep sleep. Meaning vasanas. Nothingnessness from this state we are saying because nothing is manifest. But everything is lying there in the deep sleep, torment. So therefore he says when your vasanas manifest, they first appear as thought in your intellect, then desire in your mind, then action in your physical body. at the action level, at the physical body level, you do the action.
Guruji, I have a question. So in this chronology, samskars, which are the impressions, samskars, impressions are created as a result of action also.
So it is created by your actions only.
So does it come in the chronology, if you look at thoughts, desires and action, then samskar would come after action?
I told you, no, vasana and samskar can be used as synonyms.
Okay.
When you say actions produce vasanas, actions produce impressions.
Impressions.
At some point in time, these impressions become vasanas.
Okay.
At some point in time, these impressions become vasanas. Some stage going on, it's like, you know, you understand it like this. If you pour little water from a mug on the, floor, the water will just flow away. And then you can wipe it, it will go. But if you constantly keep on pouring water, even drop by drop by drop, something is leaking, let's say. From the top, the tap is leaking and it's drop by drop falling on the floor. And you were not there for a few days at home. You didn't know. But drop by drop only it's pouring. And after 10 days you come, you see, what is this? And then you repair it, you clean the floor. But when you clean the floor, it is not as if the water is gone, nothing is there. What will be there? There will be mark.
Mark.
That is when it is found the vasanas. Again and again and again and again, you keep on doing the actions with those thoughts, that will keep on forming samskaras. At some stage, it will become vasana. That's why they say, you better be careful as to what you are thinking. We are all more concerned about what other people thinking. What is Shweta thinking about me? What is Sadhana thinking about me? What is Mamta thinking about? Doesn't matter what they are thinking about me. What matters is what you are thinking. What am I thinking in my head? Because when I keep on thinking, I am creating vasanas. And when I say I am creating vasanas, what am I actually creating? What am I actually creating?
Desire.
My own bondage. My own destiny. I am creating my own destiny foolishly. You know, and then I say, hey Baba, stars has to become alright. This has to become alright. Even yesterday, somebody was talking to me about, every family has something or the other. So, in some discussion they are saying, horoscope is not alright now. They want their son to get married. But then, they found somebody, I don't know where, according to that horoscope of the son, they should not discuss about his marriage this year at all. I don't know whether that fellow told the horoscope fellow to tell like that. He must have told. He's not interested in getting married at the moment. He must have bribed that fellow and said, hey, tell it like this. At least my mother and father will keep put. I don't know what happened. So, this whole year they do not want to talk about it. At least 1 year that fellow will be peaceful. Whether you are getting married, not getting married, and they come to me also. So this is the thing. So what I am saying is, constantly if you think, what you are constantly thinking, that becomes your destiny. But you think that somebody in the clouds, this star, that star is written. See, even that is not wrong. Jyotish is one of the angas of Veda. One of the Vedanga is Jyotish. Shiksha, Kalpo, Vyakaranam, Niruttam, Chandas, Jyotishaniti. This is the Mundaka Upanishad. All these are Vedas Anga. Anga is part of, the legs, limbs of Vedas. So Jyotish is not just like that they said. There's a meaning. But then, when you are born, these stars and everything is moving in a particular order. You are born there according to your karma. Now, once you are born, then the influences are all there. Then, if you know that, how to deal with it, you can understand. That's all. But then when you talk about Jyotish today, how many people really know the Jyotish correctly? That is another question. Anyway, let's not deviate. The point is, you are unnecessarily blaming the start, this and that, while all you need to do is manage your thoughts. Managing your thoughts is the most difficult thing. That's what he is saying. So therefore, he gives the example. Consider the example of a painter. A painter is one who has vasana for painting. While he is asleep, his vasana remains dormant without expression. When he wakes up, the vasana expresses itself in the intellect as thought of painting. The thought manifests in the mind as desire for painting. The desire expresses in the physical body as action of painting. It follows, therefore, that as long as your vasanas exist, there will be a constant flow of thoughts, desires and actions. And somebody comes and tells, Swamiji, all the time these people keep on coming and gossiping to me. What is that telling us? When you say, they're going on coming and gossiping, going on coming and gossiping with me. It means you are having gossiping vasanas. You are not interested in gossiping. When they are gossiping, you would have fallen off to sleep. 2-3 times you doze off. Then the fellows will say, hey, what's the point in coming and gossiping with this one? You are encouraging because you have vasana for gossiping. Birds of the same feather flock together. You are having those vasanas, therefore you are attracting them to you. The day you don't have those vasanas, they won't come. Not possible. That's what he's saying. The desire expresses in the physical body as action of painting. It follows therefore. But as long as your vasanas exist, there will be a constant flow of thoughts, desires and actions. And when your vasanas are exhausted, your thoughts, desires and actions become extinct. That total exhaustion of vasanas is the exalted state of self-realization. See, in this context, Swamiji doesn't go further to explain all these things in the book, because elsewhere we'll talk about it. But since we have already studied Tattva, I don't know, did we do Tattva in this class?
No, we did not. We did not.
Okay. But in my other classes, I've mentioned this. We talked about Sanchita Vasana, Prarabdha Vasana.
Yeah, that we discussed, Guruji. The types of vasanas we've discussed.
Yeah, yeah. That many times we have discussed. But in Tattva Bodha, specifically, there's a portion he talks about it. That's why I asked.
Tattva Bodha.
I don't know. Maybe we did it. I don't know. We have to go and see the recordings.
I'll check that out.
Yeah. So, in that portion, Sanchita means total vasanas. You know, we have all kinds of vasanas that we have gathered in all janmas, which has not been exhausted, which is still there. All that put together is called total. So, like you have one fixed deposit in this bank, another one in that bank, you have share this thing, that thing, all put together is your total asset. From that, few fixed deposit has matured today. You know, out of the total, some has matured. Like that, out of the total sanchita, some vasanas which require immediate fructification, they are called prarabdha, prarabdha vasana, that has pushed you into this janma. Okay. Now that you are born, if the birth happened to be human birth, if it is anything other than human birth, if it is animals, birds, whatever it is, then they do not have a choice to exhaust the rest of the sanchita during the time. They also do not have option to add to the sanchita. They simply exhaust the prarabdha and go. But if that happens to be human birth, then the human beings have the option to exhaust all the sanchita vasanas or add sanchita vasana, meaning fresh vasana. Now, you come to the Vedanta class. It happens in somebody's house or some hall somewhere. And you come there, you attend the class, and then there you see some painting. Hey, this painting is really nice. I should have this kind of a painting in my hall. And one place is empty. You go on thinking about it, you will develop vasana. Fresh vasana. That is called agami. So, you create agami, but once you create, it becomes part of sanchita. Now, when you exhaust all vasanas, when he says here, total vasanas are exhausted, you can only exhaust sanchita vasanas through knowledge. Prarabdha vasana can only be exhausted through experience. Okay. So we say, when you, through knowledge, exhaust all the sanchita vasanas, you realize the self. But the prarabdha vasanas are there. That's why you find all the Mahatmas who have realized the self. Ramana Maharishi has realized the self. Swami Ramtirtha realized the self. Swami Vivekananda realized the self. Saint Tyagaraya realized the self. You know, so many people. Saint Tyagaraya continued singing. Swami Ramtirtha was giving lectures and lectures. Swami Ramana Maharishi hardly spoke, very little, very quiet. So there are different people who are Mahatmas, realize the self, but their actions are all different. Why? Due to their prarabdha vasana. But prarabdha vasana just merely gets exhausted in their case. You know? And once all the prarabdha vasanas are exhausted, the body is given up. Then they have attained Mahasamadhi. Such people do not take birth again. Because all vasanas are exhausted. Yat gatva nani vartante. Once having reached that state, there is no way, no point, there is no reason for them to come back, because no vasanas. So therefore, when he says the total exhaustion of vasana means sanchita vasana, you realize this. So whenever they say vasana lessness, remember it has to be thoughtlessness, desirelessness, actionlessness. And whenever there is actionlessness, it has to be desirelessness, thoughtlessness and vasana. Simply dropping the action, but having more and more vasanas, nothing happens. That's why he says people have misconstrued this state to mean abstinence from action. Abstinence from action doesn't immediately remove vasanas. Idle mind is a devil's workshop. Isn't it? You'll sit down and say, what can I do today? Oh, okay. I'll call this person. I'll send a message to her. I'll ping. All this pinging, punging and all that we keep doing because of this only. People have misconstrued this state to mean abstinence from action even as the vasanas remained within. Therefore, Vedanta says there's no way you can keep quiet. You have to do something about your vasanas. Consequently, they imposed physical restraints and denied themselves material and sensual life. I'm calling themselves spiritual. When you are spiritual, you may not be interested in all these things and you may be sitting quiet. You know. But that doesn't mean simply because you are sitting in one place and not conducting all these things, you are spiritual. Many fellows do that and become highly frustrated. Little realizing that vasanas, thoughts and desires lingered within and they go through frustrated lifestyle. Such practices led to suppression rather than sublimation of personality. There is no way you can suppress. You know, if you suppress, it will become more strong. And if you keep on forcing, it will bounce back. You will gather more momentum. It will become very, very powerful. That's why they said, you don't worry, you get into Grihastashrama. Majority of the people have to get into Grihastashrama. Very few, like Adi Shankara, who have gone through all that in the previous Janma, they can go directly to sannyas. Not everybody can do that. Not everybody should do that also. Nothing like that. You can be a grahastha and be a sannyas. That's what he talks about in the Gita, no? Anashrita karma phalam, karyam karma karoti yaha, saha sannyasi, saha yogi. Who is a sannyasi, who is a yogi? Is he saying one who wears aka robe? White and white with the mala and chandan and the forehead. All these fellows only are sannyasis. Other fellows who wear jeans and t-shirt are not sannyasis. He's not saying all that. No discussion about all those things. Anashrita karma phalam karyam karma karotiya. Saha sannyasi saha yogi. Na niragnirna chakriya. Beautiful verse. Verse 1, chapter 6. So therefore he says such practices of forcing oneself out of action thinking that that will bring about, desirelessness. It's foolish. In fact, in our own academy, it happened once. When I was studying, one of the girls, she came from Bangalore. Very nice girl, very cheerful, very talkative, very friendly. Suddenly, after a few months, pata nahi kya hua, she became very serious. And when we sit and have lunch together and all, we will be cracking some jokes and all that. Hey, PLN. They call me PLN in the academy. PLN. Be serious. Oh, what happened to this girl there suddenly? She was very serious. She cut the hair off. Suddenly, she's done all that thing. Started wearing Rudraksh. She became very, what do you call that? Different personality. That's not what she is. I don't know from where she got this idea. And after a few months, she left the academy. She couldn't continue. She couldn't finish the course. Very difficult. In fact, it's good that she left so that in the world at least she would have done something. But what I'm saying is, I'm not discussing some personality here, but it is to educators. Never ever do that. In the thought that you just become quiet, suddenly everything will become. Be serious. You are hardly serious. When you become spiritual, you can hardly be serious about worldly things. Only thing you have to be serious is about your getting back to the self. Everything else is bakwas. Everything else you will be lighthearted. So that's what he's saying. Such practices led to suppression rather than sublimation of personality. They are interested in sublimating the ego. Frustration will only add fodder to the ego. Ego will become more strong. That's why any small thing you snap, you get irritated. People are scared of coming closer to you also. Hey, Baba, Papa is coming from meditation. Let's keep quiet now. Papa has just come back from meditation. Everybody is quiet. Because Papa will start shouting. What kind of a meditation he did, I don't know. So that's what he said. Continue.
The mission of human life is to eradicate vasanas, thoughts and desires. Vasanas form the mask of ignorance that veil your divine self. You attain self-realization by wiping out the last trace of vasana in you. The knowledge of Vedanta helps you remove the mask of vasanas and discover yourself.
So the purpose of life is that formula you remember, God plus vasanas or desires equals human being. All that human being has to do is eradicate vasanas. When you eradicate vasanas, more and more freedom you get in life. It is because of vasanas, you get into the condition called desires. And the moment you come into the condition called desires, you will not be happy without it. And you will not be happy with it also. That is the state of bondage. You are desiring that I must get it, I must get it, I must get it, I must get it, you will work for it. And after getting it, there is fear because everything in this world is passing, fleeting. So I may lose it, I may lose it, I may lose it, I may hold on to it, hold on to it. So with it you are not happy, without it you are not happy. You are in a state of complete bondage. The bondage comes because of these vasanas and desires. You must remove these vasanas and desires. But you must do it carefully. You must understand the technique and do it. That's what he's saying. Vasanas form the mask of ignorance that veil the divine self. You attain self-realization by wiping out the last trace of vasana in you. Even that last bit, even if there is one bit, it will come back. But in a tuberculosis patient, a doctor tells, you take this medication for a few months or years, they give you, right, prescription. And you are supposed to take that. You will become fine after a few months. Don't stop. The traces of that this thing will be there. You cannot afford to stop. You go through the medication fully. Then only you will come out of it. Like that. So he says, knowledge of Vedanta helps you remove the mass of vasanas and discover your self. When this unnecessary covering is removed, the true self from within is revealed. Continue.
Vasana has been indicated as your inherent nature, but that would not be a proper definition. In truth, vasana is that which produces the inherent nature. It would be more appropriate to indicate vasanas as being merely the primal cause or source of thought, desire and action. Your intellect can comprehend thought, desire and action, but it cannot comprehend vasana, since the intellect is a product of vasana.
Continue.
The basic material composing the human personality is vasanas. You are therefore a substantial form of your insubstantial vasanas. This idea is subtly brought out by use of camphor in the temple. A temple has a deity in the innermost sanctum surrounded by three enclosures. The sanctum is dark. A small oil lamp burns at the altar of the deity. The priest lights a piece of camphor from it. The camphor burns away to illuminate the darkness within. The light reveals the deity to the devotee's vision.
Continue, please.
The ritual is significant. The temple is designed to represent a human being. The deity is the sanctum. The deity in the sanctum stands for Atma, the supreme self within you. The self is dark, unknown. To reach the self, you must first cross the limitations of the three material layers of your personality, symbolized by passing through the three enclosures. When you do this, reaching your inner core, the perceptor is said to give you the knowledge of self. Camphor is a solid substance. When exposed to the atmosphere, it sublimates into mere fragrance. Camphor closely resembles vasanas. Vasana is a Sanskrit word derived from its root vas, meaning scent, fragrance. Vasanas produce your personality traits. When your vasanas are good, you are pleasant. When your vasanas are bad, you are foul. Vasanas are insubstantial. Yet, they go to make up the substantial human form. The perceptor helps you burn up your vasanas in the fire of knowledge. The process leads you to the goal of self-realization.
Yeah. So, vasana, when you say is inherent nature, that is actually maximum we can give definition. But if you go deeply, it is the vasana that produces the inner nature. Inherent nature. In that context, we say vasana and ignorance are synonyms. No. So, vasana cannot be defined by the intellect. It is that which produces the intellect. But this subject Vedanta gives a beautiful technique how to sublimate. So, that line is also very, very interesting line. He says the basic material composing the human personality is vasanas. You are therefore a substantial form of your insubstantial vasanas. The fragrance consolidated is camphor. You know, when the camphor is lit, when you light the fire and burn the camphor, what is happening? The camphor merges in the atmosphere. It is what? It is nothing but fragrance consolidated in a form. Similarly, you are nothing but vasanas consolidated in a form. That is what it is. And when the vasanas change, the forms also change. That's what I was mentioning to you. Haircut, hairstyle different. The clothes you wear different. Environment also changes. Your room changes. The house changes. Designs, everything changes. So he says, therefore, you are a substantial form of your insubstantial vasanas. So he gives the example of the camphor. It's a very, very interesting example. In the temple, especially if you go, he's talking about South Indian temple. You know, what is the South Indian temple? You have to cross three layers. And then you go into the sanctum sanctorum, which is dark. There the God is there, the idol is there. And God is not seen. God is unknown. That is that which is not known to us. That is what is represented by darkness. So you need to, through the guru, know. And what does the guru do? He'll initiate you into the knowledge. So the priest lights the camphor in the light, and then in the camphor light you see the divinity within. What is the significance? You cross the layers of the body, mind, intellect, and then go into the deep core of your personality, and then ultimately burn your vasanas fully, then the self reveals itself. That's what it means. So therefore, we have to, through the knowledge of the higher, slowly, slowly burn the vasanas. It's only the knowledge that can get rid of vasanas. Because the very vasanas are formed because of the ignorance. In fact, the very vasanas is ignorance. You can say vasanas are formed due to ignorance and vasanas is ignorance. Both are same only. You understand? Ignorance cannot be defined. Ignorance is beginningless. Atma is also beginningless. When you say Atma is beginningless, Atma is endless also. But in the case of vasanas, it is not endless. You can end its indigen if you want. But that is only possible through proper intake of knowledge and application of knowledge in your life. That is how you can get rid of the vasanas. It's only the vasanas that will burn. Sorry, it's only the knowledge that will burn the vasanas. You cannot burn the vasanas by doing actions. So therefore, we studied, you have to do action. At the same time, now he's introducing knowledge. Now this was the question Arjuna had. In the third chapter, he said, in the second chapter, the whole chapter, Sri Krishna is talking about knowledge. It's called as what? Sankhya Yoga. Yoga of knowledge. So after listening to that, Arjuna was asking, you are going on praising knowledge, but you are forcing me to do the action. Jayasi chet karmanaste mahabuddhir janatana tatkim karmani koremam niyojayasi keshava. Yamishreneva Vakyana Buddhim Mohaya Sivame Tadekam Vada Nishchitya Yena Shriyoham Apniya. That is the question Arjuna asks. You are praising knowledge and forcing me to do action. Tell me suddenly, should I follow knowledge or should I follow action? Sri Krishna says, you have to gain the knowledge and implement that knowledge in your actions on a daily basis. Then you will be able to come to a stage where your mind is not interested in the world, then you can get into the full pursuit of knowledge in sannyas. Therefore, you must first learn karma yoga. What is karma yoga? Renunciation in action, not renunciation of action. You understand? That renunciation in action, because you should not do renunciation of action. If you do renunciation of action, then the vasanas are there, you will already see, you will be frustrated. So what you should do? You should do renunciation in action, which means what? Action underlined by knowledge. That's the next topic. We'll talk about it in detail next class. But I'm just giving the gist. So when the action is underlined by this higher knowledge, when you are exposed to the knowledge and you act, then you will be burning the unnecessary, undue values you've kept for all these things. All these values you have kept on all these objects of this world. That's why you don't want to leave it. But with knowledge, slowly, slowly, you understand. And then you pull yourself back into yourself. So that's for, therefore it is renunciation in action you do. Then when the vasanas are exhausted, you have only one vasana to realize the self. Then you can practice sannyas lifestyle, or you can be in the world and have sannyasi spirit and just pursue the self. That's a different thing.
I have a question.
Yes.
So, if today for somebody whose vasanas are completely exhausted, so even if that person is still living, it would still be a state of moksha because it's complete liberation.
It's a state of moksha. It's called Jivan Mukti. But that person doesn't vanish into thin air because prarabdha vasanas are there.
So the body will live through the prarabdha vasanas and exhaust that.
But
even in living in their mental state, they are completely liberated and not
completely. Pratha Vajana is to sing, they keep singing.
It is to finish.
Pratha Vajana is to dance, they keep dancing. But they have no doership thereafter. It's only for the world the personality is existing. But as far as they are concerned, for all practical purposes, all vasanas are exist.
So what I question is,
the fan is running, you switch off the fan, it doesn't stop immediately. Because of the momentum, it runs for a while. But you have switched off the fan. Similarly, the vasanas are exhausted. Because of the past momentum, the prarabdha is continuing. That's all.
So what I'm asking is, that means that moksha doesn't necessarily only have to be after death. They can be living moksha because they are completely liberated.
That's what Adi Shankara's argument is all about. He says that is why he introduces the concept called Jivan Mukta. Otherwise, there is another concept called Videha Mukti. Videha Mukti means liberation after death. He says, if liberation is achieved only after death, then all our scriptures are second-hand information. They are not information of the liberated souls. Isn't it? So he says, no, nothing like that. While now, see, for example, today you are persecuted by certain things. You know, traffic jam agitates you, let's say. You've been studying Vedanta for some time. So now, after all this, you become a little calm within. After you become calm, doesn't mean the traffic jam will not be there. You go out from Gita class, when you go, there may be heavy traffic jam. But now the traffic jam doesn't affect you anymore. Earlier, you will be propping and fuming, idiots, you know, like that. Now, that thing, you are just happy. You're reading a book or listening to a song or going off to sleep. Driver is driving. You know, you're not agitated. Why? In other words, the world is there. It is the same world. It's continuing. But for all practical purposes, you are free from its persecution. That's called moksha. You are free from the persecutions of the body, mind, intellect, environment, everything. That's called moksha. That moksha you have attained if you have exhausted all the sentiments. You are right. Is it okay?
Yes, I understand. Thank you.
So let's conclude now. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om Kayena Vacha Manasendriyairva Budhyatmanava Prakrite Swabhavat Karomi Adhyat Sakalam Parasmai Narayanayeti Samarpayami.
Hariyom.